Okay, we're starting here by the two dots on the top of Nun Chet Amud Aleph. The Gemara is discussing in the Mishnah places where the woman has stains or sightings of dam as to whether that renders her tmei'ah as if she is in nida because of the takanat chachamim of tamim, or it's in a place where we can assume that maybe it came from some other source and therefore she is tehora. So the Mishnah said that if it's found al akeva ve'al rosh golda tmei'ah, if you find it on her heel or you find it on her big toe, then she would be tmeah. So where it says bishlama keva, when it comes to her heel, avid de noga be'oto makom, there is a chance or possibility that it touches the area where the dam is discharged from. If she's sitting cross-legged, if she's sitting in a manner that it could have been in contact with the area where the blood is discharged, then there's a possibility that you would see dam on the heel because of a discharge of menstrual blood. Elo derosh gudla my taima. On the other hand, why would the big toe be something that, if you have dam or a sighting of a ketem on the big toe, why would you assume that that is coming from the makoma torfa? If you want to say zimden de noga ba'akeva, maybe sometimes the big toe rubbed up against her heel, and therefore there was a transference of the dam from the heel to the big toe. Since when do we assume that tuma moves from place to place? We assume that tuma might be there for a long duration. We might assume that tuma came a while ago, but we don't assume that the tuma was somewhere else and then moved to this location. So if you find it on the big toe, there must be a reason inherently why the big toe is considered to be a location that makes her tmeah, and not because it just rubbed up against something else. Batanyo, and we have evidence of that in the Braita. Haita la makah betzavara. She has some sort of injury or wound on her neck. Shetuchalit lot, that she can say that the dam that she's finding on herself now came from that wound, then tola. She can, the word literally means hang it, but tola means, in a sense, attribute the sighting of dam here to the dam from the wound on her neck. Al-ktefa, on the other hand, if it's on the shoulder, she'ena yechola litlot, we can't attribute that dam that she's sighting now to the dam or the wound that she has on her shoulder. There she can't attribute it to the shoulder blood, assuming now the top or the back of the shoulder is where the injury is. Therefore, if she sees dam on the front side of her body, which in all likelihood came from the place where the dam is discharged, that would make her into nida, she can't claim that maybe it came from my shoulder or the injury that I have on my shoulder, because the shoulder is towards the top or the back of her, and the blood wouldn't have moved from there down to the front. On the other hand, if she has an injury on her neck or on the front of her body, then we can assume that possibly the blood came from there and not from the menstrual blood, and she can be tola and assume that she is tehora. Ben omrim, and we don't say, and this is the evidence of the fact that we're not machzikin tuma lemakom lemakom, is shema biyada netalto ve'viato l'sham. So we're not going to say that maybe her hand touched her shoulder or where the injury was, and then the hand moved down to her leg or her thigh, and then the blood came off her hand onto her thigh. And we assume that maybe even from place to place, we can assume the dam got there through some unintentional touching or unintentional movement of the dam. You see over here in the Braita that we will assume that the blood could have come from a particular place that would be plausible, that that dam that's on her body now came from that place directly. But we don't assume is that somehow indirectly the dam got to that location. So when the injury is on her shoulder, we're not going to assume then that the blood that she's sighting on her thigh came from her shoulder through her hand. And similarly over here, we're not going to assume that the dam on the big toe came from rubbing up against the heel, which got the dam from the place where she discharges her dam. Mari says, okay, ella shiny rosh kudla de bahadi de psa'a avi de mitrame. The big toe is a little different because when she's walking, it moves underneath that area. And therefore, there is a possibility that dam dripped down or came down from her menstrual discharge and landed on her big toe. So given that, there is a possibility that it came from there. And we're going to assume, unless she has a reason to believe that the dam came from somewhere else, we're going to assume that that dam she finds on her big toe is menstrual blood and not dam from some other variable. Where it says, "Velo machzikin tumami makom lemakom." Is it really true that we don't assume that tuma can move from place to place? Batanya, we have another braita, nimtzeit al tishrei etzbo'uteha. She finds dam on her fingers, not the palm side of her hand, but the back of her hand, on her knuckles, somewhere on the top side of the hand. Then, tmeah. She is considered to be tmeah, And we assume that the dam came from menstrual dam, because your hands move around a lot. My time, what is the reason that the dam is on the backside of her hand? Normally, when a person is in contact with something, they do it with the palm of their hand, the inside of their hand. And over here, the assumption would have been that if she came into contact with menstrual dam, she would have been on the palm of her hand, not on the back of her hand. So how did the dam get to the back of her hand? Aren't we assuming that she checked or she came into contact with the area where the dam is discharged with one hand and then it rubbed up against the other hand? So the palm of one hand was the one that got the blood and then it touched the back of the other hand, and that's why there's dam on the back of this hand now, because it was transferred from one hand to the other hand. And then that would be evidence of the fact that we do assume that tumah moves from one location to another location, against what we suggested before, that we're not mavzikin tumah l'makom l'makom. Where it says, lo, shani yada, dekula avida denaga. Hands are different, because, as Braita itself said, yadayim are yaskani yotem, hands inadvertently touch, move around, and get into all different areas in different positions, and therefore it's possible that she unintentionally came into contact with that area where she discharges the dam, even with the back of her hand, not just with the palm of her hand. And since it's something that people are not attentive to, then we're going to assume the dam got there because it was menstrual dam, and not because it came from somewhere else. All right, now the next piece in the Mishnah says, if you find dam ashoka bal parsota, you find it on her thighs or on her feet, mi bifnim, it's on the inner side of them, then it is tmeya. If it's on the outer side or the tzadim, we said it was tohora. Marns no, mi bifnim ad hecha. How far is mibifnim? What is considered to be the inner side of the leg? What is considered to be the outer side of the leg? Amre debay Rabbi Yanai. So the Beit Midrash of Rabbi Yanai, Amakoma Chavak, Rashi explains it in the following manner. Safek, first of all, not exactly sure where it is. Uchemidumali, I think it is the ligament that runs between the thigh and the leg, so it runs by the side of the knee, that ligament that runs from the thigh down to the lower part of the leg, that's what I think is the inner side. V'chavak he metichat hagidim. So chavak, or the meaning of the word, is stretching of a sinew, stretching of a ligament, shechufkeim hayerek v'ashok, because it hugs, it pulls together the upper part of the leg and the lower part of the leg, samuch lo tokefetz, next to that joint, being the joint of the knee. Rashi here describes it as being the sinews or the ligament that joins the thigh and the leg. And at that junction, that joint, that is on the inner side of the knee. So anywhere where that joint is or where that connection is, that's what's considered to be the inside of the leg. The Balei HaTosafot bring Rashi's interpretation as well. And then they quote from the Aruch, who gives two other possibilities as to what the explanation is. One is, when the person puts on these slippers, sandals, they have these loops where they're tied. Those loops are places where you tie them or you make the sandals tight by running a string through them. That's called the chavak. So that's one possibility as to what he says the references to, which means that it must have been where the loops or the connectors for these sandals were on the inner side of the shoe, and that's what determined what's considered to be the inside. Or he brings, when a person folds their leg, if they go into a squatting position, the place where the shok leans or sits on top of the yerech on the leg. So you have the thigh and it sits on top of the calf. When you squat, that area that is covered by the basar, by the joining or the pressure of putting them together, that's called the inner side of the leg or the makoma chava, the place that connects. That'll be the threshold. What's considered to be inside and what's considered to be outside is the place when you squat, the overlapping place between the thigh and the calf area, and that overlapping area is the beginning of the inside, and then anything that goes from there towards the inside will be classified as inside, and that'll be the cutoff point. So those are the three different possibilities. It's either the ligament or the inner joint of the knee. It is the joint area of it when you squat between the thigh and the lower leg, or it is the ankle loop that is part of the shoe, which sits on the inside of the leg. Those are the three possibilities of what this chavak means in describing the area that's considered to be the inside of her leg. Now the Gemara asks the obvious question, which is, makom chavak, That area that is considered to be the chavak, which is the threshold, in itself, is that considered to be the inside, or is that considered to be the outside? Meaning that is the chavak itself the threshold point, and from there to the outside is tahor, or is it the threshold point to the inside, where from there to the inside is considered to be tahor? Tashma, the Tani Rav Katina, we have from the Brito that Rav Katina brings, I'm a kom chavak, until the place of the chavak, v'chakok atzmo kivlifnim. And that joint area, or that loop area, or that overlapping area, is considered to be kivlifnim. It's considered to be like it's on the inside. So, we have here from the Beit Midrash of Rabbi Yanai, that the threshold is the chavak, and then we have taught from Rav Katina, that the chavak has the same din as being the inside. Rav Chia Bereid, Rav Avya Matni Lo Behedjo, he says it explicitly. Amrei de Beit Rabbi Yanai, he includes it in the Mesorah from the Beit Midrash of Rabbi Yanai from those bright out. Ad Mekom Chavak, V'Chavak Atzmo Kilifnim. So it's not even that we have somebody who's qualifying the statement. Rather, it's actually in that Mesorah from Rabbi Yanai that the Chavak is the place that's considered to be the inside. And the Chavak Atzmo is considered to be the inside. By Rabbi Yirmiyah. Rabbi Yirmiyah asked the following question, which is that if you have sightings of dam along the leg that take on a certain shape or a certain look, what is the din with requires to that? So the first one is kishir. If it is like a ring or a bracelet, mahu, what's the din? Kishura, mahu. If it's in a straight line of drops, what's the din? Tipim, tipim, mahu. If it is a splattering of drop, then what is the din?
Tosafot thinks that this case is a case where it splattered on her beged and not on her body, and the size of the splatterings are less than a kagris. Whereas the Rashba believes over here that this could be a splattering even on her body, and it could even be bigger than a kagris, because the problem here is not the size of the splattering, but the mere fact that it is splattered, which isn't the natural way for dam to come out or be discharged from the woman.
The rochav yerecha mahu. And what happens if it runs across the breadth or the width of her thigh? All these types of stains that she finds on her body, what are we to make of them given their shape and given their layout?
Which isn't typical of menstrual dam.
So tashma, we said al psara, we saw in the brayta yesterday, that if she finds a stain on her body, then safek tameh, safek tahor. And we don't know whether it came from menstrual blood or came from another exogenous variable. Tamei. There we assume that she is tamei'a. Al-bsara. What does it mean on her body? My love. Doesn't it mean ki ha-gavna? Like these examples that we just brought, all these different forms of stains. Isn't that what the reference is to in that paraita? Says lo. Dilma da'avid kiritsua. That's maybe only in a case where it is a stripe or a straight line. And that's why the Balei Tosafot point out that before when it said kishura in a straight line, it can't be really a straight line because that's the description that the Gemara gives in the end, which is that it is kiritsua, which is like a string or it's a continuous stripe or streak of dam. Whereas when it spoke about kishura, it was splatters or dots of dam that went down in a line. That's how you distinguish between kishura that we asked about before and ritsua that's being mentioned here. So the Gemara says you can't prove anything from that braita because that braita is speaking about a type of stain that is straight and streaky, and therefore it doesn't give us any evidence with regards to these other matters. Ha'itata, dishtakachla dama be'mashtita. We had a woman who found blood on the mashtita, is the Aramaic word, which is a reference to the sheti, and the sheti and erev are the different strings that are used in the weaving process. So the sheti strings are the ones that are put up on the frame of the loom itself. The erev are the strings that throw through with the shuttle to go back and forth. So the strings of the sheti are set up on the screen that is put on the loom or is used to have the strings be stationary. And then the erev strings are moved through them all through different methodologies of depending how the loom was set up or whether it's a hand loom or if it's a mechanical loom. All of those will differentiate how it's done. But in any way, she has this screen. She has this frame that has these strings on it, and she was working with them, and now she finds dam splattered on the strings. So, ate the kamei de Rabbi Yanai, she came to present the case for Rabbi Yanai, amarla, tezel vetete. Go ahead and do it again. Show me how you were weaving beforehand. Vahatanya, ain shonim b'tarot. Didn't we say at the beginning of this Masechta, when it came to trying to determine whether something was tamei or tahor, for instance, there was a person putting on a beged, and we weren't sure if when he put on the beged, it touched the sheretz that was there. And one of the suggestions back there was, why don't you do it again, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel said. And the Braita said that ein shonim b'tarot. We don't do do-overs with regards to tarot, because we never know if you're going to do it the same way you did it last time. You might change it a little bit, might be off by a little bit, and therefore we can't assume that you got it exactly the same way in the do-over. So why is Rabbi Anai asking this woman to do a do-over here? So he says, ki amrinan ein shonim. He qualifies that and says, when do we say we don't do do-overs? That's the kula. When it's going to be a kula to assume that this item may not be tameh, or this item didn't touch the other object. About the chumra, shonim. But when it's going to come, the chumra, then we will be shonim. We do do-overs in order to determine what was the outcome or what was the situation over here. So in a case like we saw earlier in the Masechta, where Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, do it over again. And if it doesn't touch the tarot, there were a number of different scenarios over there. It didn't touch the tameh object or it didn't touch the tarot. Then we assume that it is tahor. So there, we're not going to give you the right to do a do-over to then determine that the item is tahor. But over here, where we're asking to do a do-over, and that's going to make her tameh, then we will ask her to do it again. Because the assumption that we will establish is that she didn't get the dam from menstrual blood. Only if we see that the screen or the frame that she has these strings for the lumon was down in that area, or when she places or works with it, it's near that area, then we will assume the dam came from her. So our default stand would be that she is tohora over here. And therefore, when we go and do a do-over, the do-over can only do one thing, which is make it worse for her, or make us assume that she did see the dam did come from her. And that's why Rabbi Yanai was willing to have her do it again, or show me how you used it, because that would undermine the default of her being tohora, and assume that she is Tameya. Alright, now we move on to the next part of the Mishnah, where it says, Haita Poshatato. She was putting it on, taking it off, or she was moving around with it at night. We said over there that we're not so particular about where the stain is found, because the tunic or the clothing then moved around. It was used as a sheet. She rolled over it upside down, inside out. So therefore you can't really understand based on where the stain is, as to whether it came from that place or didn't come from that place, because it was all over the place, this beged. So Tanya, Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Yosi, Davar Zehureti Be'ir Romi. This is a psak halacha I gave with regards to a case when we were in Rome. That is, if you remember the story that we saw in Masechet Me'ilah with regards to Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Yosi traveling with Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai to Rome to try to undermine the Roman decrees against the Jews. And then they had different miracles that take place along the way, as well as the fact that Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Yosi speaks about the fact that he was in the treasuries of the Roman king, and he saw the parochet from the Mikdash there, as well as the fact that Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai gets angry at Rabbi Elazar ben Yosi, ends up killing him and having to bring him back to life because he had promised his father that he would bring him back alive. That story, if you remember, in Me'ilah, so it seems to be on that trip, Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Yosi gave psak halacha, which is only interesting because that was the problem that he had with Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, which was that he jumped to give psak halacha in front of his quote-unquote Rebbe. And here you see him saying that he gave other piske halacha when he was there. And I gave this psak halacha li'isur. I assumed that it was problematic. Shabbati etzel chachamim shibidarom. And when I came to my fellow chachamim in the south, when I returned, amrulo yafeh horeta, that the psak halacha that you gave was correct. Now, he doesn't tell you what the psak halacha is, but based on the reference the Gemara gives to the Mishnah, you have to assume, and Rashi notes this, that it's being met a case where the woman was taking the tunic on and off during the night, or she was moving around with it during the night, and he was posek chumra to say that the stain that was sighted on the beged, even though it was a location on the beged where it wouldn't necessarily have come had she'd been wearing the beged properly from the makoma torfa, nevertheless, because of the night where a person moves around and the beged moved around, we can never be certain, and therefore we can assume wherever the stain is that it came from her menstrual blood and she is tmei'ah. Tarabanan, aruka shelabsha chaluka shel kitzara. You have a very tall woman who wore a tunic of a shorter woman. Uktzara shelabsha chaluka shel aruka, or vice versa. You have a short woman wearing a tunic of a tall woman. If the tunic of the smaller woman, the shorter woman, reaches as far as the makoma tofa, the place where she discharges her menstrual dam, shalaruka, then shtehem tmeot. If we find a stain on the beged, we assume both women are tmeot. Since we can't assign it to one of the two women over here, we have to assume it came from both of them, because we can't identify it as belonging to one particular woman. Vim lav, on the other hand, if the shorter woman's tunic does not reach as far as the makoma torfa of the taller woman, then she is tehora. The taller woman is tehora, v'tzara tmeya, and the shorter woman is tmeya, because in that case, the overwhelming evidence is the fact that it came from the shorter woman, because for the taller woman to have a stain on a tunic that doesn't reach down to that area is very unlikely. The more likely outcome or scenario was that the shorter woman wore it beforehand and then stained it and then lent it to the taller woman without checking it or without her being aware of it, or the other way around. The taller woman who borrowed it then gave it back to the shorter woman, then she had a stain there, the shorter woman, because the taller woman's stain would not have been on the tunic because it's too short for her. Tanya idach. So now we have another braita. It says, badka chaluka. She checked her chaluka. Over here, the Bach changes the girsa slightly, and he says that the girsa should be badka atzma vechaluka. Not only did she check the tunic that she was wearing, she also checked herself and did not see any dam, not on the beged, not on herself. Bishelato lechaverta. And then after that, she lends it out to her friend. He tahora vechaverta tolaba. So now they find a stain on the beged after she's lent it out to this other woman. As far as she's concerned, she is tahora, because before she handed it over, lent it to the other woman, she checked it. And according to the Bach, she also checked herself. And therefore, we cannot attribute the stain on the beged to her, because she has evidence of the fact that it really didn't come from her. On the other hand, the friend she lent it to is also tahora, because she can say that it came from the first woman. Now, even though the first woman did a check and said there was nothing on it, she says, I don't trust her. I don't trust her check. She did a superficial check. She didn't check properly. And the dam didn't come from me. It was on the beged before she handed it to me. So both of them are tahora. Therefore, since we can attribute the stain to someone else, in this case, we allow both women to pin the stain on the other woman, and both of them are considered to be tahori. Amar Rav Sheshet, le'inyan dinatnan. This is only true with regards to the civil obligations here, monetary obligations that we're speaking about here, which is who has to pay for the laundering of this clothing, who has to pay for the stain that is in the clothing. So the first woman says it's the second woman who has to pay because I checked it beforehand. The second woman says, you didn't check it well. I don't know what you did with the checking. I assume it came from you, and therefore I don't have to pay for the laundering. Since the person who lent it out doesn't have evidence of the fact that she checked it and there was no stain on there, she can't bring that absolute evidence to the table. Therefore, in the end, she's going to be the one that has to pay for the laundering. Aval le'inyan tuma, when it comes to tuma, he tohora v'chaverta tmeya. Then the first woman is tohora, and the second woman is tmeya. We assume that she is tmeya, because we say that you have to attribute the dam to coming from somewhere. In this case, the more likely outcome is that it came from the second woman and not the first woman. And so therefore, when we're looking at probabilities, we're going to assume the probability or the likelihood is that the dam came from the second woman, and we're going to assume that she is tmeya, and now let her say, I don't trust the first woman with regards to that checking. So maishna meha detanyo. Why is this case any different than the following case we have in a braita, whereby we don't allow either of the women to attribute the blood to the other woman, and therefore both of them are tmeim, which is shtei nashim shintasku b'tzipor achat. Two women were involved in processing a bird, and obviously the bird was shechted, and there was dam that was involved. Ve'ein bo ela kesela dam. The bird itself only has, in totality, the amount of blood that would make a stain the size of a sela, the coin that size. Ve'nimtza kesela azu, kesela azu. And you find a stain on each one of the women, on their tunics or their begadim. You find a stain of a sela size on each of the two women. So shtehem tmeot. Both of them are considered to be tmeot in that case. Umar says, Shani Hokam, Dika Sela Yitera. Over there, there's circumstantial evidence that there's definitely dam nida over here. The bird, in totality, only has a sela worth of dam, and now you have two stains that are the size of a sela. So, for sure, one of the women got their stain not from the bird, but rather from menstrual dam. If that's the case, misafek, we're going to say both women are tmeot, because we can't assign the tuma to one woman over the other woman, and we're going to assume both are tmeot. So the Gemara says that's because of the fact that there's circumstantial evidence. In our case over here, we don't have such circumstantial evidence. Therefore, it's not like the case that we saw before. And the Balei Tosafot say they don't even understand the Gemara's question. How did the Gemara even bring up a question when you have, in the previous case, women using the tunic sequentially, and over here you have the women working simultaneously? How is this Braita even a question on the case that we brought before? Ignoring the answer that we gave, why it's differentiated in the circumstantial evidence, the case itself doesn't to be similar at all. Therefore, the Rabbeinu Tam says that the Braita is speaking about a case where they worked or processed the bird one after the other. So it's not in a case where they worked simultaneously, but rather where they worked in a sequential basis. And therefore, had the first woman come to us before the second woman had been involved with the bird, then we would assume that the woman is Torah and assigned the whole sela dam to the stain that she found on her beged. It's only now, because the second woman is involved in the case, that the first woman actually loses out, and the psak halacha is different for her because she came together with the other woman now to get the psak halacha. So in this case, the second woman is causing the first woman to be tmeah. And similarly in our case, maybe the second woman's saying that it was the first woman who stained the beged should be meaningful in making the first woman tmeah, even though she said she checked and said she was Torah. And therefore, it's the equivalent of our case before, which is where one woman wore it, and then afterwards another woman wore it. So to here, one woman worked with the bird, and then the next woman worked with the bird. So we say, what's the difference then between these cases, where in one case, sequentially, we assume both of them are Tmeot, and in our case, we only assume one of them is Tmeah? And the Gemara answers, that's because in the attribution to the bird, you can't attribute all the dam here to the bird, and therefore, for sure, someone is Tmeah over here. And since we can't pin it on any one of the two women, we're going to assume that it is both of them that are Tmeot, versus our case, where the first woman did a check, and therefore can pin the tuma on the second woman, and therefore we're going to assume that it is the blood coming from the second woman, which is the higher probability outcome, because the first woman checked, and the second woman didn't do a check. And so therefore we'll assign the tuma to her, not to the first woman. The Tanu Rabbanan, Lavsha Shlosha Chalukot, the woman is wearing three layers of clothing, Habedukim La, that were checked, and all the clothing was clean, it didn't have any stains on it. Im Yacholah Litlot, Tola. If she can be tole, the sighting of dam, to some exogenous input or variable that put the dam on the beged, afilo tachton, even if it's only found on the inner beged, we assume that she can be tola, and she is tehora. So even though the likelihood of there being dam on the inner beged and not on the two outer layers is a low probability scenario, nevertheless, if she walked through the butcher shuk, or she worked with a bird, and she can attribute the dam to that event or to that experience, then we will, even though we only find it on the inner beged. Eina yecholit lot, eino tola. If she has no exogenous variable to assign the dam to, then she can't assume that the blood came from something external. Vafilu be'elyon. Even if she finds blood on the outer beged, we still assume that it came from her and it was menstrual blood, even though in all likelihood if it was menstrual blood, it should have gone through all three begadim and not just be found on the outer beged. Nevertheless, we're going to assume it is menstrual blood. Ketzad, give us the cases that demonstrate what we just said. Avra b'shuk shotabachim tola. She went through the butcher shuk, then she's going to assume the blood came from the butcher shuk, afilu b'tachton, even if it's on the lowest of the three begadim. Lo avra b'shuk shotabachim. If she didn't go through the butcher shuk, afel yon eno tola. Then even on the upper beged, she can't assume that it came from outside, but rather came from her, and it is menstrual blood. Balei Tosafot yesterday asked the question as to why over here do we assume that the dam can get there, even though it would have to go through two layers in order to get to the third layer, and we don't assume that had there been a reason for the blood to be here, it would have been on both the other ones as well. Therefore, if it's not, that should be evidence of the fact that it came from the outside, not the inside. So, for instance, in the case where she has the sighting on the outer beged, and she doesn't have any dam on the inner two begadim, then why, in that case, where she didn't go through any place that had dam, we assume it's menstrual blood, even though, in all likelihood, if it was menstrual blood, it should have been on her inner clothing as well. Nevertheless, we don't say that. Yet yesterday, in the Breita, we said that if it's on her body, then we assume that it came from her menstrual blood, because had it come from the outside, you would have seen a stain on her clothing, and then on her skin. You see that the Gemara on yesterday's daf assumes that if you have dam on an inner layer, it had to come through the outer layer, and there should be evidence of it. Yet over here, the Gemara ignores it completely. So Tosafot yesterday explained that there's a difference. When you have multiple layers of bigadim, a woman will raise one of those layers, move one of those layers, or allow one of those layers to be exposed because she has additional clothing underneath. What she won't do is expose her body by moving the clothing or whatever she's wearing away. So the case back on the Gemara in yesterday's daf was a case where it was found on her body and there was a tunic or something over that. So in that case, the only way it could have gotten there is it went through the tunic, because she wouldn't have raised the tunic and exposed her body to allow the stain to come, and that's why we assume it came from internally. In our case, it was just three layers of clothing. There, it could be on the outer layer or the inner layer, because she would not be averse to allowing one of those pieces of clothing to run up, to move, or to be taken off, or to not be exactly in place, because she has multiple layers covering her body. And so because of that, we don't assume that the blood has to go through each layer to reach wherever it is found. And this obviously seems true about bigadim, like tunics, which are not so well shaped and can move around. Whereas a person wears more fitted clothing, they have to say that the clothing underneath exposed because the clothing above moved away or folded up. That's a much less likely scenario. In that instance, it would be unlikely that we would assume that you could get the dam to the inner beged without first penetrating through the outer beged. And it really has to do with the nature of the clothing that they wore on their day, which were these tunics that don't have any form-fitting or shape that ties them to the goof. All right, next Mishnah. Betolah b'kol davar shehi chola. So this is an important principle that we use with regards to tamim that we see by nida, which is that if we can attribute the dam to any item, even if it's slightly remote, we will assume that the dam came from that other variable and is not menstrual dam. Now, obviously, that's because the whole institution of tamim is midrabanan, and in general, we are going to go to kula when we have a safek. And the institution was made in such a way that if she can be tolah, she can assign or attribute the dam or the stain to some other possibility, then the chachamim didn't institute tumat nida in that instance. So for instance, shachata beima chaya v'of, if she shechted an animal or a bird, and it seems from this Mishnah, like we saw in the beginning of Masechet Murah, that a kol shochatim, that anybody can be a shochet or can shecht animals, and that would be true here, based on our Mishnah of women that are doing shechita. Although we do find the Balei Tosafot in the beginning of Chulin mentioning that there were minagim or poskim that said that women should not be involved in shechita because shema yitalfo, maybe they'll get tired or they won't be able to carry through the shechita. And even though women technically work, she wrote, to perform shechita, nevertheless, in practice, they did not do this. Or benitaska b'ktamim, whether she was laundering or she was involved, she was working with tamim stained, Oshiyashva Bitsados Kimbaan, or she was sitting next to someone who was working with these animals or working with these tamim. All of these you would attribute to the source of the dam that she finds on her beged now, and that's not menstrual dam. Harga Macholet. If she killed a louse, Harizel Tola Ba, she can assign or she can attribute the sighting of dam here to the fact that she killed the louse. Ad Kama Tola. How much can she assign or attribute to the killing of a louse? Ruchinyana ben Antigonus Omer ad kigris shelpul. This is a shiur that we've mentioned numerous times in the Masechta before, and we said we're going to get to it later in the Masechta, and here it is. The Gemara here says that the amount of blood that you can attribute to a louse is kigris shelpul, is like the size of a cut or sliced bean. That's because, as Rashi says over here, that is the maximum amount of blood that we could possibly assume that a louse would have in its body, and therefore that's the maximum size of a stain that you can attribute to a louse, which is generally assumed to be about a diameter of 10 to 20 millimeters, which is somewhere between the size of a dime and a nickel, and that's usually the threshold that's used to assume that it is a problematic ketem, and we can't just assume or assign it to the possibility of a louse. Vafo pish lo harga. Now, Rabbi Chanina ben Antigonos qualifies his statement and disagrees with the Tanakhama. Tanakhama says she can only attribute it to a louse if she killed a louse. Rabbi Chanina ben Antigonos says, by default, you can attribute it to a louse. Even if you have no evidence or you didn't kill any louse, you can assume, since they're around, or since that's a possibility, then that stain can be attributed to the louse as long as it's below that threshold size. Bitola bibna o bibala. You can also assign or attribute the stain to her husband or her son who has an injury or has some dam on them. And again, here it has to be in a reasonable fashion by which they have a wound, they have dam on them, as well as the fact that she was in close proximity to them, whether she laid in the same bed as them or she was sitting next to them. There has to be some reasonable assumption as to how the blood got from her husband or her son to her. But if you can come up with that plausible scenario, then we will attribute the dam to them rather than to her menstruating. And obviously, these are just examples of things that you can be tola in. It's not uniquely associated to bina and bala. It would apply to any reason, person, or situation where we can assign or attribute the source of dam to something besides her menstrual dam. So there is a question here as to the limitation or scope of this heter, of the bina and bala, as to whether it only applies to stains found on her beged, or does it also apply to stains that are found on her body itself? Yesh ba makah, if she has a wound, v'hi yuchola lehi gala, lo tzidam arizotola, and it could be exposed. Exposed here means likely that it's already coagulated and there's a scabbing on top of the wound. If the scabbing of the wound could come loose or could separate and then lotzi dam, and then it could start bleeding again, then we will assume that the blood came from that wound, even though, again, we don't see the wound open at this point in time. Then she can assign or attribute the source of the blood to that. Masebi shachat shabbat lifnei Rabbi Akiva. We have a case law, an incident where a woman came before Rabbi Akiva. Amra lo ra'iti ketem. She says, I saw a stain. Amra la shema makah haitabich. That maybe you had some sort of injury or wound. Amra lo hey. She said, yes, it was. V'chaita. And it's already begun to heal. It's already scabbing over and it's begun to heal. Amra la shema yechola li gala olutzidam. Maybe even though it's begun to heal, it's scabbed over, maybe it could be re-exposed, or it could be the scab could pull away and it could start bleeding again. Amra lo hey. She said, yeah, that is possible. It's not healed to the point where nothing would happen, or if something rubbed against it, it wouldn't start bleeding again. Vitahara Rabbi Akiva. And Rabbi Akiva said that she was tehora. Ra'a talmidav mistaklim zebazeh. He saw that his students were looking at each other in wonderment. How could Rabbi Akiva paskin this way? Amar lehem, ma davar kashe b'nechem. Why is this so difficult for you to understand what I did? Shelo amru achamim hadavar lahachmir ela lahakel. When it comes to tamim, we always lean to the kula side, not to the chumra side. That's because, again, it's an institution midrabanan that relies on circumstantial evidence of the fact that she probably is having a menstrual sighting when she gets a ketem on her body or in her clothing. And therefore, when we have any possibility of attribution to another source, we're going to go with that attribution, be tola, in that other source, because we're going to go to kula. Shinemar, as the pasuk says, Isha ki tiyeh zava, dam yeh zova bibsara, shivat yamim tiyeh binidata, v'konogei haba yitma adarev. And so we know that the source of menstrual blood that is tamei is dam velo ketem. It has to be blood itself and not a stain. So the stain is not what the Torah is speaking about. The stain is a rabbinic institution. So therefore, we're not going to go the Chumrah, but rather the Kula. And over here, where even though it might be a lower probability, but since this woman has a possibility of assigning or attributing the dam to this wound reopening, I'd rather do that than assume that she had a menstrual sighting. And the Ochlin Eir suggests that the Talmidim were surprised here, not because they didn't know the Halacha, that by Tamim you go the Kula, but because Rabbi Akiva seems to be leading the witness over here. Generally, we lean the kula when the information is volunteered by the individuals bringing the question. But over here, Rabbi Akiva is actually leading the witness, and that's what Rabbi Akiva's response over here is, that by Tamim, we go the kula, not just from the perspective of when there's a psak halacha, we lean the kula, but we actually try to help the person who's bringing the question to find something to be tola on, in order to avoid her having to become tmeah from such a ketem. Eid shunatun tacharakar. If you have a cloth that was used for checking, that's underneath the mattress, underneath the pillow, Benimza alav damagul. We already saw this quoted earlier. And you find on it a round shaped stain of blood. Tahor. Then in that case she's tahor because if the aid was used to check, then mashuch. If it was streaking, then tameh. Because if you do a check with an aid, the dam or the stain that you're going to see there, if it was a stain that came from her herself, would be blood that streaked across the aid, not blood that is stained on there in a circular fashion. Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Tzadok differentiates between a stain that is streaky, where he says that must have come from a check that found menstrual blood, versus a stain that is circular, that it's not the type of dam that would be on there from a check. And therefore, we assume that it came from somewhere else or some external factor. All right, Gemara says, Tanina, lahad tanu rabbanan. Our Mishnah then corroborates that which we've seen in a Braita, which is, Maise vitala Rabbi Meir bikilor. That we had an incident where Rabbi Meir attributed the stain on the beged to kilor, which is a type of eye makeup that was used. It's called collyrium. And Rashi here explains that the collyrium, that it has a red coloring to it. Similarly, Rabbi Tala b'sraf shikma. Rabbi assumed that the sap that came from the sycamore tree, which also has a reddish tint to it, if the woman was involved or had gone by such a tree or had worked with this item, then we attributed the stain that she found in her beged to the other source, meaning either here the sap or the makeup, and we do not assume that it's menstrual dam. So that's again something whereby we're willing to be tole in things that maybe are lower probability, but since they have the same color as the dam anida, we will assume that if the woman was involved or came across those items, that maybe that's the source for the stain on her beged or on her body. Oshi yeshva, she sat down next to somebody who was working. Yeshva in, lo yeshva lo. Only if she sat down and was there in place next to those individuals do we assume that maybe the stain came from those other individuals, and that's why she has dam here, but not if she wasn't sitting. Tanina lahad tan rabbanan. Once again here, we have a Mishnah that corroborates what we learned in a Braita, the tan rabbanan. Avra bashuk shel tabachim. If she goes through the marketplace of the butchers, safek nitaz aleha, safek lo nitaz aleha. If there's a question as to whether she got squirted by the blood from the butchers that were working, then tola. Then in that case, she can assume that the blood did come from the butchers and not from her menstrual dam. Safek avra, safek lo avra. If she has doubt as to whether she did go through the shuk or she didn't go through the shuk, then she is tameah. Then that safek isn't sufficient grounds for her to do attribution. That's what the Mishnah is saying. Yeshva. If we know for certain that she sat down next to people working with these animals that were shechted, or with tamim, things that had dam or blood associated with them. So she knows for certain she came into contact with these individuals. Doesn't mean that she actually had blood on her, or she knows for certain that blood came on her, but the fact that she was present in an area where that was possible, that's enough to give attribution to those items. On the other hand, if we're not certain that she sat next to this person, or she never sat next to this person, just because somebody else worked with animals doesn't mean that we can attribute the dam to her if she's not sure if she went there or she went into that room or she saw those people. And so similarly here with the shuk of the tabachim, if she's certain she went through the shuk, we can have attribution to the butchers for the source of the dam. And then if she doesn't even know if she went through there, then that type of safek is not sufficient grounds for attribution. So again, we have to have a certain amount of certainty that she came into contact with something that could have been the source for the dam. So that part you need certainty for. After that, then even a safek is sufficient, even a low probability, but still a possibility exists. That's enough to give attribution to that item rather than assuming it came from her menstrual blood. Okay, harga macholet, if she killed a louse. Harga in lo harga lo. From the Mishnah, it sounds like the Chachamim or the Tanakama believes that this is only true if she actually killed the louse, and not if she didn't kill the louse. Matznita and Mani. Who's the author of our Mishnah? Where it says, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, he. It must be Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, the Tanya. We have a Braita that brings down three opinions. Harga, Tola, Lo Harga, Enu Tola, Divi Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. If she killed the louse, she can attribute the source of the dam to that killing of the louse. If she did not kill a louse, then she can't attribute to it. That's the view of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, and that's similar to our Mishnah. Doesn't matter whether she did or did not kill the louse, she can attribute the source of the dam to a louse. Amar Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, the Devarai, my position in case. There is no end. V'l'divrei chaveirai, and the Chachamim's position ain't sof. There's no end to it. And now he explains. V'l'divrei ain't kates. There's no end to what I'm saying. She'en lecha isha she'tora lebala. You're never going to have a woman who is actually tora lebala. She'en lecha kol mita umita she'en bakama tipei dam ma'acholet. Because there's no bed that doesn't have little blood stains on it, that doesn't have little lice that were crushed on it. And therefore, every bed or every sheet always has a stain of blood on it. And according to my position, where only if you know that you killed a louse can you attribute it to a louse. Otherwise, we assume it's the woman's menstrual blood. Then every woman's always going to be tameah because we're dealing with something that is very commonplace and something where he's saying here every bed has little stains on it. And if that's the case, every time you're going to see a stain, you're going to attribute it to the woman's menstrual blood, and she's always going to be tameah. That's the problem with my position. The Divrei Chaveirai ain't sof. To the position of my peers, the Chachamim, there's no end. She'en lecha isha she'en ha-tora lebala. According to them, there's never going to be a woman who is not tora lebala. She'en lecha kol sadin v'sadin she'en ba'kabinti beidam. Because there's no sheet that doesn't have different drops of blood on it. The Baalei Tosafot point out that they just changed the language from mitat mitat to sadin v'sadin. Because in the first case, he's speaking generically. He's speaking about beds of men and women. He's speaking about beds in general that people always have stains on their bed from a macholet, from a louse. Over here, when he's speaking about the woman in particular, it says there's no sheet that doesn't have a stain of dam on it. Because here we're speaking about the woman's bed in particular. No woman's bed has a sheet that doesn't have a stain on it. And the problem is that the Chachamim never gave a shiur. And they assume that you can attribute it to a louse, no matter how big it is, and no matter what the size of this stain is. So given that, then there's in the chasof. There's no end to your ability to be mitahar a woman from a stain. So any stain, you're just going to attribute to a louse, even though she didn't kill a louse. And even if the size of the stain is bigger than any louse you know of. So about nirin divei Rabbi Chanina ben Antigonus. Rabbi Chanina ben Antigonus, who was mentioned in our Mishnah, his position seems more reasonable. Umi divarai, umi divrehem. Then my position and the position of my peers, the Chachamim. Shehaya Omer, he explains, ad kama hi tola, how much can she attribute to a louse? Akigris shelpul, like the amount of a split bean, ve lidvarav anumodim. And to his position, we agree. And therefore, the attribution for Chanina ben Antigonus, he agrees with the Chachamim, that it doesn't have to be something where you actually killed the louse, or know you killed the louse. But on the other hand, he gives a cap to the size that we will attribute to a louse, and therefore he limits the utility of such a tliyah and doesn't make it into this endless ability to assign all the stains or all problems to a louse. Tosafot also qualifies the statement where Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says that we hold, like Rabbi Chanina ben Antigonus, that's only true when you didn't kill any lice. But if you did kill a number of lice, then you wouldn't be limited to the stain being the size of a kegris. It could be even bigger because you killed a number of lice. And then that way you can actually attribute the blood to the lice if you know you killed them, even if it's bigger than kegris. So that's just a qualification the Baalei Tosafot will make with regards to us paskening the limitation of the attribution to a louse of kegris vote. Ule Rabbonon d'amrei tola, according to the Rabbonon who say that you can attribute it to a louse and doesn't matter if you killed it or not, ad kama, how much can you attribute? Amar Reb Nachman Bar Yitzchak tola mi pishpesh v'ad kiturmus. It can be anywhere from the size of a pishpesh, seems to be like a bed bug. Ad turmus is until the size of a lupine. So it's huge amount of dam that you can assume comes from a louse, even though, again, the louse is somewhat limited in its capacity to stain. Nevertheless, the Chachamim believe that you can make attribution to it, even if it's from something as small as a bed bug to the size of something as big as a lupine. Nevertheless, we'll assign it, we'll attribute the dam to a louse. And that's what Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel said before, that I think that Rabbi Chanina ben Antigonus' position is more reasonable, because this seems way too big a stain to assign or attribute to a louse. Tanur banan, pishpesh zeh, this bed bug, arko kirachbo, is shaped in a equal shape, bitamo kirecho, and its taste or its flavor is the way it smells, brit krutalo, it's an expression that the Gemara uses, which brit kutalo, which is that the nature of the animal is such, or it always happens this way. Shukola mololo, if you roll it in your fingers and you crush it, meriach bo, you can smell the smell of this pishpesh, of this bedbug. Probably is a veiled reference to the way that in the Torah and Tanakh, Hashem says that certain things continually will happen, for instance, by brit of the mabul, both in the bringing of the mabul, where Hashem says to Noach that I have a brit, and therefore I have to keep you alive, and also the brit afterwards, where Hashem says he won't bring any more floods. So again, these are brit, are covenants, which say that this is the way things work, or this is the way that nature works, and it might even be over here that the brit kruta is a protective device or preservation for this bug, because since it has such a foul odor, it wards off the predators who would want to possibly eat it. Now the Gemara explains what's the relevance of each of those statements in the Braita. Our kokarach bo, if it has equal size in width and length, why is that halachically relevant? Linyan ketamim. If you find a stain that's that size, then you would expect to see it to be equal in its length and width, and therefore, if you find a dam that is a different shape than that, then you wouldn't necessarily assign it to the pishpish. Tamo kerecho, the fact its taste is similar to its smell, linyan truma. That has to do with person who's consuming truma. It's not. And it's picking up in the middle of a mishnah that speaks about a person who is eating truma, or truth is that it could even, as Rashi said, be someone who's eating chulin, just happens to be in the context of the mishnah. The mishnah before that was speaking about truma, and we've actually seen the mishnah earlier where in the beginning, when he's eating truma, he becomes temei while he's eating truma. What should he do? Then the Mishnah continues and says, O shetam tam pishpesh befiv. He's eating truma and he tastes the taste of a bedbug inside of his mouth. Harizeh yiflot. He should spit out the truma. And as Rashi says again, it's no different than chulin because the pishpesh is a sheretz and it's asur min haTorah to eat it. And so therefore, if you're chewing on your truma and you suddenly realize that there is a pishpesh in this truma, you should disgorge it. You should spit it out, so that you don't swallow the sherets, and the same would be true by chulin. Just happens to be the context of the Mishnah is truma, and therefore it says the din in particular with regards to truma. It says, minayoda. How do you know what a pishpesh tastes like? A pishpesh is not a kosher item, so how would you ever know that when you're eating your truma, that you suddenly came across a pishpesh that you're chewing on? That's because tamo kerecho. That's because the taste of the pishpesh is very similar to its smell. Bakati minayoda. How do you know what it smells like? Okay, fine, the taste is like the smell, but how do you know what it smells like? The answer is, brit krutalo, shekola mololo, meriach bo. The nature of this pishpesh is that whenever you roll it up, you crush it, it gives off some odor, and that odor will then give you sensitivity or the sensation of what it would be like if you tasted it, and that's how the person would know that if he's eating and he came across a pishpesh in his food, to spit it out. Amar Ravashi, ir sheyesh bo chazirim, if you have a city that has pigs in it, ein choshishim nektamim. None of the women in that city have to worry about stains anymore. Rashi says that's because the chazirim are ochlim shkatzim viramasim. They eat these creepy, crawly things. They munch on them. They make tizim dam. When they dig into them and they chew on them, it squirts blood. And since there are these pigs running around and they're eating these items, then we can always attribute the stain that's found on the beggar of the woman to the fact that she passed by a pig that was eating, and it squirted blood on her. Obviously, this is a big kula. Amar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, v'ha did dokeret, ki'ir sheish b'chazirim damyo. So dokeret, which is the name of a city, so he says that city is the equivalent of a city that has chazirim in it. And even though there were no pigs in the city, Rashi says, despite the fact there were no pigs, tabachim harbe, vashpot ushkatzim etzuim ba, that it has other things that make it like as if it has a pig there. And that is that it has many butcher stores, it has large garbage dumps, and plenty of creepy crawly things running around. And so all of those things combined together make it that there's plenty of blood, quote-unquote, flowing in this city. And therefore a woman can always assign the source of her ketem to being in this city, which has blood all over it, and not to her having a menstrual sighting. Now the Baalei of Tosafot already want to back away from this heter, because obviously they're living in Europe, and all the cities and all the places, the villages that they live in have pigs. And we still want there to be some semblance of a takana left to what the Chachamim said with regards to the ketamim. So already the Baal HaTosfot would have here start to qualify this. Zomer Rashbam, the Filiotemic Greece. First of all, this idea that the Chazirim are the source of blood, you can even assign it to a stain that is bigger than a Kegris. Now, like a louse who has limited ability to stain because of his size. But Afilu Min HaChagur L'mata, even if you find a stain in the lower half of the Beged, Afilu Nodin Tzaska, and even if she didn't deal with them, or she wasn't there with them, Ben La Makah, and she has no wound, Sheish Lali Galea, Olotzi Dam, that could be exposed or uncovered and saved Dam. So it sounds like from the Rashbam, this is like a huge kula, that even in areas where it's circumstantial evidence would indicate that it was menstrual blood, we still would assign it or attribute it to the Chazirim. Mi Omeri, the Enli Smoch al Zachshav, Hakel. Today, we can't really rely on this, Hakel. Kish Motzak Tamim, Bemakom She'en Rigilot Ligabehen Chazirim. When you find stains in places that pigs don't normally touch or rub up against, Bechein Minhag Dolotalina. And the Minhag is that we don't attribute this to the pigs at all. And therefore, where these animals are raised in a more domesticated manner now, and the Jewish neighborhoods are separate, we're not going to assume that the Chazirim are really the contributory reason for the dam or the stain that's found on this woman's clothing. But the other way around, if there is circumstantial evidence that would allow you to attribute it to the pigs, to Okiyotzvan Talina, then we are toleh to the Gemara Shas, like the Gemara says. So the Re really flips the burden of proof for the idea of Tliyav v'Chazirim the other way around. From the Pashtuta Gemara, it sounds like, and that's what the Rashbam says, that we believe that Chazirim can be the source of all stains. Therefore, even if the circumstantial evidence is leaning in favor of saying it was menstrual blood, we still will assign it or attribute it to the pig. On the other hand, the Re is just the opposite, and he mitigates that and says, absent circumstantial evidence that it came from a pig, then we're going to assume it was menstrual dam, because we're not toleh in pigs. Elaim Kane, there's evidence or reason to believe that the pig was involved in this. So if she went through the pig shuk, or she went through an area where the pigs are stored, or she rubbed up against the pig, all of those would be circumstantial evidence then could allow us to be toleh in a pig or in something else. But you need reasonable probabilities and reasonable assumptions to have it be assigned to one of those items and not to her menstrual dam. And now the Gemara continues. Ad kama hi toleh? Until what size can she be toleh? Amar Rav Huna, kegris eino toleh. Pachot Migris Tola. Rav Huna says that the threshold shiur that's given Rabbi Chanina ben Antigonus of a kegris is the upper threshold, which means that the gris is already too big. Anything less than a kegris is the size that you can be tola in a louse. Rav Chista amar kegris tola, yeter migris eno tola. That is the threshold for what we can attribute, meaning that up to a gris, including the gris, you can assign to a louse. Above a gris, then you can no longer assign it to a louse. So obviously their machloket is about the threshold itself. Does that sit in the area that is considered to be like that which is the lower size, or that which is a larger size? And that's what Gemara says. Let's assume here that they're arguing about when somebody says until this size, or until this time, or until this item, do they mean until that item including that item? Or do they mean until that item not including that item? And that would be their machloket over here. Rav Huna Savar Ad Velo Ad Bichlal. When Rabbi Chanina ben Antigonus says Ad Kegris, means until a gris, not including a gris. Rav Chista Savar Ad Vad Bichlal. When you say until a gris, it means until a gris, including a gris, and that's what explains the differentiation in their opinions. Amar Lacha Rav Huna, Rav Huna can say Ika Ad Vad Bichlal, Ika Ad Velo Ad Bichlal. Both of those are valid formulations, and you might formulate it in either way, but Hacha L'chumra, v'hacha l'chumra. The way we determine which way to go is whenever it's l'chumra. So we always assume whichever way is l'chumra, that is what is meant by va'ad, until. So when you have to reach until a threshold of some sort, if the chumra is to say that the threshold is included in the measurement up to that point in time, then we'll assume that it's part of the lower measurement. If it's signing it to the higher measurement is l'chumra, then we'll assign it to higher measurement. And that's exactly what he did here. You assume that the kegris belongs to the higher level, and therefore only until a gris will be tola, the gris and higher will not be tola, and we'll assume that then that's menstrual blood. I'll say to you that in general, in other places of halacha, we would go to chumra when it comes to ad bad bichlal, ad velo ad bichlal. We'll always go to chumra like you're suggesting. Lekula alo amrina, and we would not go to the lenient side. V'hocha b'd Rabbi Abou. But over here, we're leaning on Rabbi Abou. Dama Rabbi Abou, ko shiurei chachamim lachmir. All the shirim and the chachamim, we assume are lachmir. Chutz mi kegris shoktamim lachel. The exception of the stain of a kegris, where we go lekula. So Rabbi Abou's statement is that there is a mesora of such, that all shiurim, we assume that the whatever it turns out to be the chumrah, is where we'll assign that threshold shiur. But by tamim, we have a mesora to go to kula. And so therefore, that's what I'm doing. I'm going to kula, and assuming kegris is included in the threshold amount, and therefore up to a gris, including a gris, you can assign or attribute to a louse, and say that it wasn't menstrual blood. Only above that point would you say otherwise. Some people quote this machlok between Rav Huna and Rav Chista, not as an explanation or qualification of our Mishnah, rather simply as an independent machloket, which is Rav Huna Amar, kigris, ukeyeter migrigris. Rav Huna says when you say kigris, it means a gris, and more than a gris. Both of those are problematic. Chista Amar, kigris, kipachot migris. When you speak about a kigris, it means less than a kigris, but the kigris is considered like less than a kigris, which is similar to what their opinions we saw before. They are arguing about ba'ad b'chlal, and they're arguing about the advar b'chlal in this particular case by nida as to what is the rule over here. That's similar to the way we explained in machloket before, which is that Rav Huna believes that every advar b'chlal or advar lo b'chlal we go to chumra, and so over here too we go to chumra and assume that kegris is assigned to that which is bigger than a kegris. Whereas Rav Chista says that's true of all other shiurim, but when it comes to ktamim, the chachamim told us to be lahakel, to go to kula. And since over here, the kula would be to say that it's advar b'chlal, that the kegris is like lower than a kegris. That means up to a gris and including a gris, we will assign attribution of that, the source of dam, to a louse, not to the woman's menstruating. And therefore, we'll go to kula in this instance. All right, we're going to stop here at the bottom of Nunchet Amud Bet.